Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Unfiltered Coffee Podcast. I am Spencer Iadakatis, green buyer and head roaster for Peixoto Coffee.
Hey, guys, my name is Eddie Padilla. I'm a former store manager and coffee educator through Arizona Coffee Social. We are your hosts. In this podcast, we aim to catalyze conversations around coffee science, business, ethics, philosophy, culture, and tasting.
We are so thankful to have you, and now on to the show. Alrighty, well, Brewing Basics, here we go. First, thank you guys for joining us. Kind of want to get right into a little bit of extraction theory. So to kind of define extraction theory, there's two main things you have to know. One is flavor extraction, and the other is strength and how you separate those two. So I think this is the first part where a lot of people kind of get confused or intermingled between them. So when we talk about extraction, we talk about the percentage of the coffee that is actually soluble, that you can actually extract the flavor of. And that's about 30% for most coffee out there, or that's a number we use. Maybe it's less or more, but roughly 30%. And that's everything that's in the coffee. So the natural acids, the sweetnesses, the lipids, and the things that are bitter. So that makes up that whole 30%. And the range that you're kind of looking for in this is roughly around 19 to 22% of that 30% that you want to extract. So when you're grinding coffee and brewing it, you're doing it in such a way that it will have a certain amount of surface area open so that you will actually pull out the right percentage of that flavor. And we got really lucky with coffee, and it kind of goes in a linear way the way we would want, which the first things that get extracted and the easiest things to extract are the acids, and then the next easiest are the sweetnesses, and you're kind of extracting lipids and stuff like that, which make up the oils and bodies. And the last things you usually get are the things that make it bitter. So for any of these brewing methods, it's always going to kind of go in that direction. And you're just trying to figure out the grind size that works best to pull out the optimal amount of acids and sweetness and lipids and a little bit of bitterness usually. And you try not to go too far. Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think TDS or total dissolved solids is something that kind of gets thrown around a little bit. You know, when we talk about what level of extraction we've met, we always say, oh, we've met this much TDS. And TDS is just the amount of soluble compounds that, you know, are present in that solution. But we'll get a little bit more into extraction percentage. Yep. And then the way I kind of like explaining extraction is, like you said, it's just how much we're pulling out of this, you know, soluble coffee, but also how efficient were you at reaching its maximum extraction. It's something super important. And yeah, it's 28 to 32%. I guess that's kind of the thing that we always say, that that's the maximum extraction percentage.
Yeah, I think you touched on something that's important there. When we say TDS, that's one part of an equation that you put in to figure out your total extraction percentage. So you kind of need to know how much coffee went in. So we use like the dose as a part of that equation, how much water passed through that dose. So that's the out, which would be like if you're using a 1:16 ratio, if you did 20 grams of coffee in, you would do 320 grams out. And the TDS is the amount of solids that you got from that brew, which that is actually related to the strength of coffee. So the TDS is actually the strength. And then you feed that into the equation, which is...
The equation?
You have it.
I have it, actually. So the equation is... So I have a setup as extraction yield percentage equals TDS times beverage mass over dose. So yes, we could use an example of like an espresso shot. You can do, let's say you reach a TDS of, what's a really regular TDS?
9%.
9% times beverage mass, which is your overall out that you have for that shot, which can be, let's say it's a 40 gram dose or 40 gram out and your dose was 19 grams in. So you can do that math. So let's say it's TDS of, you said 9% beverage mass, which is the 40 grams over your dose, which is, let's say it's just a 19 gram shot. So your overall extraction yield percentage would be 18.95%. And how would you explain what that actually means, that percentage?
Yeah, so that percentage is how much you pulled out of that 19 grams that you put in. So of that 19 grams, there was a percentage of it that was able to be extracted, and that's what ends up in the end liquid. So if you had 19 grams and you had 30% of it was extractable, that would be 5.7 grams of the 19 that you could total, you could get into the liquid at the end. But since we only got 19%, mm-hmm. we extracted like 3 grams, or this might be even milligrams.
Yeah,
it's a small amount.
Yeah.
Got extracted into the liquid. So you would subtract, if you wanted, there one way to do dissolved solids is you could get the end beverage, that 40 grams, and you could dehydrate it completely.
And see how much exactly you pulled out
yep.
of that starting initial dose.
So the solids that would be left over there would be, should weigh about 3 grams. And that's what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just, you know, we're talking a lot about pretty technical things here. We're getting these TDS things from a tool that's called a refractometer. And this is a pretty expensive tool that probably no one that's listening to this is actually going to have unless you work in a specialty shop or something. So we should probably talk, since this is a basics thing, about how you can figure out if you got the right extraction percentages without, you know, an expensive tool. So with you know, tasting, you can pretty much figure out where your extraction is and kind of your strength by flavor. And so this is where, you know, most people at home listening will be at and will want to learn. When your coffee is tasting sour, that's usually low extraction, and that will probably be in that like 15 to 19% range extractions. And when your coffee's tasting really bitter, you'll usually be on the high side. So maybe that's 22, 23 plus. Even if you have a bad grinder, maybe that's even above 20%. Kind of depends. So there's a pretty useful thing that we'll put in the show notes that kind of gives you a guide for this, but it's like a flavor map that gives you a bunch of descriptors, and you can kind of figure out where you are on that flavor map.
Yeah, so like characteristics of under extraction, which it's pretty much saying you start with this initial dose, but you weren't successful in getting a balanced cup. So when you hear under extraction, I think of like underwhelming, unsatisfying kind of taste, where for me, sweetness is super low, sourness is high, you know, acidity is high, but it seems low quality. And then the finish for me is always like fast and but empty.
Yeah.
And then you get the opposite, which is for me over extraction, you get like dry mouthfeel. Like we're drinking coffee right now that I brewed way too fine. So now my mouth is just like super dry. Bitterness, you get that towards the like first initial, it's very low in acidity. You get kind of this bitterness, and it's like a lingering bitterness, and then the bad aftertaste that you get associated with it.
Yeah, so this is all that we've been talking a lot about extraction now. So the other side of this that we kind of have been intermingling a little bit is strength, which gets kind of looped into this, and they're kind of in the same realm in a way. But strength is really, should be the concentration of the beverage. So these are where we use ratios to make this consistent for people and make it really easy to replicate. And why we use scales to do this is because for strength, if you were to use something like, say, a 1 to 10 ratio, which would be, you know, if we put 20 grams of coffee in, we would do 200 grams of water out. That would be a very strong coffee. It'd be strength-wise, you know, concentrated. but you could be very under-extracted or over-extracted. So you could have a lot of flavor compacted into that water, but it could still be sour and unpleasant, or it could be very bitter and drying, or it could be a really good extraction, but just really, really strong. And you could do the opposite at a, 1-to-20 ratio, which would be very weak. You could have it be really low concentration, but it could be perfectly extracted, or it could be under, which would be just watery, completely watery at that point, or it could even taste bitter at a 1-to-20. So that would be 20 grams in, 400 grams out.
I guess we can talk about maybe as a home brewer, what sort of things you can control when you're brewing at home. We can talk about temperature. Is that what you wanted to?
Yeah, let's first just overview the variables and how they will kind of relate, I think. And then we can do deep dives, or little dives at least, into each of them. So, we talked a lot about extraction already and, how you taste for that. But we didn't talk about what makes something over-extracted or what makes something under-extracted. So there's a lot of variables that come to coffee. It's a lot like baking, where a lot of different things have to go perfectly right, and you kind of want to replicate them the exact same way. So the main ones that we use are obviously the quality of the coffee going in first is your top priority of making like solid coffee at home. And then your water chemistry is your probably number two biggest thing. Then your grind size is probably going to be your number three for, end product. And then I would say heat would probably be next. And your extraction time would probably be right around that same level. And extraction time and grind size go hand in hand. So we'll talk about the relations there. And then your ratio is big into that, just for keeping your concentration the same, like we talked about.
Yep. Maybe I would say even like flow sometimes, like agitation.
Yeah, I did miss that.
Because you can, pour super heavy and extract even more. So I would say that goes into it.
Definitely. That's actually pretty high. I actually put agitation above heat, and even it's also tied into that grind size and brew time. Yep. So the three, agitation and grind size and brew time, all go hand in hand and they'll play off each other. So we can talk about the relation there in a little bit, but yeah, they're very intertwined. Mm-hmm. And there's no perfect brew time or grind size or heat. They all kind of work together to create your final extraction. But yeah, so first, talking on those variables, I think, quality coffee is a pretty obvious one. But I think, quality coffee means different things to different people. So I think this is something where you should really try to taste a wide variety of different flavor notes and, origins and processes first, and figure out what you like and try to get these from, your specialty roasters that are doing good things in your communities or even nationwide. You can order online really easily, but just try to figure out what quality means to you, because yes, some people there will think, super chocolate, sweet, heavy bodied is the best coffee in the world. And other people will think floral, exotic, tropical, super bright, vibrant coffees are the best. And it's very personally driven there. So
yeah, like even me and my girlfriend, so I'm super into like sour, fermenty coffee. Love that. But she's also like the opposite. She likes chocolatey, nutty coffee that pairs well with milk, where for me, I don't drink like any sort of like milk or alternative. I just drink black coffee. So yeah, it's really diving deep into tasting a bunch of different things and seeing what your preference is kind of leaning towards, either, exotic, like bright coffees, or the opposite, sweet, clean, chocolatey coffees.
Yeah, there's definitely a different coffee out there for every different person. And there's a lot of different roasters focusing on certain areas. So you might find that a certain roaster is picking a lot of coffees that you like, and another one is doing, the super exotic and fruit forward coffees that you don't like. So you'll probably find, quality in the roaster that you pick and in the different coffees. Or you might find that you just like a certain origin, you know, and every time you get a coffee from this origin, it's tasting the way you like. It doesn't matter who's roasting it, really. So defining what quality means for yourself is the first big step. And I think it's one that people have a lot of trouble with because they get recommended all kinds of different things and they don't ever, they feel like they're not brewing right, or they just, you know, something's going wrong when in reality they're just trying to brew a coffee that's not for them. Yeah. So that's the first one that's, you know, it's obvious, but it's not in a way if you don't know the wide variety of different flavor profiles available to you. It can be hard to actually find that. And then the next, I think water is like, you know, it's super important. It's 98% of the beverage, we always say. And it's kind of overlooked when you're first getting into coffee, and it can be a complete game changer. So if you live in Arizona like us, the water is completely useless that comes out of the faucet, or it would just destroy any coffee you brew with it. And because it's high in all kinds of minerals, and it's high in what we call bicarbonate, which is like a pH balancer. So all the natural acids there in the coffee get basically taken out, and then the minerals just cloud all the flavor. So for this, a really easy way to solve this, if you're living in a city that you can't drink the tap water or you can't use it, is to just buy spring water or RO water from the store. And that's going to solve most of your problem. You usually want just a low mineral water. So a lot of waters have, you know, what they're TDS is on the side. So water uses TDS as well. And that's the dissolved minerals that they have in the water. And you can read the side, and you usually want one that has under 100 ppm, but preferably right around 50 to 75. That's usually the sweet spot for people.
Now, to start off, yeah, you can just buy some spring water or RO water that has that TDS. But if you do want to kind of take it to that next level, because when you hear TDS in these waters, it just gives you a overall general idea of how much is in there. It doesn't exactly tell you what's in there, and that's super important as well with coffee. You want to know what kind of things are in the water in order to see how a coffee's going to do under different, with a water that has different chemistry. And a good option for this is Third Way water. You know, it's not that expensive, but you do have to buy distilled water and then drop a pack of Third Wave into that. And then that's your perfect brewing water. Of course, there are other different profiles. I mean, they make a espresso profile. They make a pour over one. There's also new companies coming out with different types of water profiles. So I think it was Perfect.
Yeah, Perfect's a new brewing water. And there's even one from GC Water, which is, I used it a lot of actually the coffee competitions, and that one's pretty decent as well. So we'll include a list of all kinds of things you can find for this in the show notes, but there's a lot of water companies doing what he's talking about here, which is taking distilled water, which has zero dissolved solids in it because it's been distilled, and then adding the minerals, a mineral pack, or with GC water, it's like liquid drops that have minerals in them back into the water and creating that perfect brewing water.
Yeah, and you can also make your own water. It's just really tough being accurate with whether you're making your concentrates and adding those concentrates into distilled water, or weighing out the actual minerals and then adding that to the gallon of distilled water. It's just really hard. I tried doing it. Just really hard being super accurate. Mine always turned out to have too much magnesium, I believe, and it just made the coffee taste too, it's muddy for sure. That's pretty much all you taste, and it's like almost like licking a battery. It was so, yeah. So get a super accurate scale, make really big concentrates. Maybe that'll be a good way to go. Yeah. But it's just really, really tough. So that's why Third Way water is my go-to now.
Yeah, it's the scales you need to really do well on that are the chemistry, like 3-beam scales, if you want to be really accurate. Some of these minerals that you add in are really highly concentrated. Like we talked about earlier, you want 40 parts per million, and you know, it's literally 40 of a million. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a very small amount that you need to do the work, or 50 to 75, I guess is what we said earlier, but very, very small amounts. And yeah, magnesium is one of those ones. It's actually a little bit goes a really long way. So it's the one that's easiest to go over on. So, but yeah, you can definitely make them your own. We can, we'll put some links in to find some recipes for that.
Yeah.
But it's a definitely harder where third wave or just buying spring water from the store. Spring water is usually right around that 40 to 50 PPM. It's really nice. And there's a couple other water brands you can buy. Like I like brewing with Fiji or Aquapana is actually good. Or Voss, if you're fancy and you want that, you know, Voss coffee water. But yeah, it brews good coffee as well. So I think the next variable that is majorly important to talk about is grinders. So we talked about grind size and all that. And I think to dive a little bit into grind size, like we talked about earlier, it's all about the surface area. And I like to think about grind size in the one particle a size to try to think about what it means to have one particle of coffee. And so you can think about it being one particle. If you took just one piece of a grind away from the mass and just looked at it, you could kind of see the size of it. And depending on that size, you've basically opened up a lot of these little caverns that are in the particle. So if you ever have looked at particles under a microscope, which I'm sure no one has, but there's some cool images online. Particles actually of coffee have these little, basically like caves, and inside the caves are like these flavor crystals. And, you know, those kind of hold all the lipids, the acids, and the sugars that we had talked about before. So when you grind something really fine, you basically expose all these little caves and you allow the water to basically get inside them and dissolve all those different flavors. Whereas if you ground something really coarse and you had this really big particle, you would actually block off a lot of these caves. So your total extraction potential goes way down when you go really coarse because some of the flavor is basically getting trapped and not exposed to water at all. Whereas fine, it's completely exposed. So when you think about a good grinder, it's one that will basically give you the most of one exact particle size because everything's going to be a distribution. So if you know like what a general bell curve looks like or a Gaussian distribution, when you pick a grind size, we'll just say like a medium grind or just right in the middle of your grinder, it's going to aim to try to get most of the particles in that grind size, but you're going to have two tails on both sides. One's going to be on the fines. So every time you basically cut the coffee up in the grinder, it's going to produce dust because it's a hard, dense little bean basically. And it every time you cut it, some dust gets pushed off and we call those fines. And on the other side, some of these really big pieces will make their way through the burrs without getting cut up enough. And so those are the two tail ends. The fine side is usually a big fat tail is what you'd call that in distribution terms. But it's a lot of fines get produced because each and every time that coffee gets broken down, it produces fines. And the fines are going to obviously extract a lot of flavor into your beverage. And the coarse stuff is not going to extract as much. So a really good grinder would have a really tight distribution right around where you want your grind setting to be. So a perfect grinder would be 100% of the coffee getting ground is exactly medium, the exact number you put it on. And then you could formulate a brewing time and method that would pull exactly, you know, as much of the flavors you want out of that. But that's just not how any of this stuff works. So we're always looking for grinders that have really good distributions. And fines get talked about a lot as being this massively negative thing because there's just all these fines and it's producing, you know, bitterness or something like that. But they're actually, in most brews, a lot of the reason it has a lot of good flavor and actually body because they're so small, they slip through the filter and into the end cup. So fines are actually not bad. It's just how many of them the grinder produces. So at a certain percentage, it's really good. And actually like an EK43, which is, you know, the grinder that everyone loves in the world, produces a lot of fines, but it also has a really good distribution at the grind you pick. So you get a lot of fines and you get a lot exactly where you want, and the rest is pretty low distribution. So we're used to that flavor and we kind of know how to brew well with that grinder. And so we can make good brewing methods around that. But ones at home will have a much bigger distributions of other grind sizes, and it can be hard to brew perfect cups of coffee because of that.
So, yeah, so a grinder, really all you're doing is using shear force to, you know, increase surface area of this coffee. And yes, ideally we would want something that's perfectly in the center, but then you do have that argument of, okay, is it really going to be complex enough if it's like perfectly the same grind distribution right in the center? So you do want some of that fine to give it a little bit more complexity. But yeah, too much and it'll, you know, you'll over extract that those parts because they have more surface area and more contact time is, you know, extracting these fines. So yeah, you do want a grinder that gives you more of that center distribution, but not too many fines, not too many boulders. You want kind of to stay somewhere towards the center. And we'll talk about some grinders that are affordable that give you somewhat a good distribution.
Actually, really quick to talk about not specific grinders that do that, because we'll talk about that later, but two versions of grinders that do very different things. So a lot of people know of blade grinders or spice mills, as they're called, where it's basically a rotating blade and a little chamber, and you kind of put your coffee in there and it just cuts it up into random pieces, basically. Or burr grinders, which is what we're talking about right now, for, you know, these really strong distributions where you can pick a certain grind size, and the grinder will do a very good job of doing that by basically separating two burrs at a certain distance from each other and only allowing the grind size that you want between those burrs. Whereas the blade will kind of rotate and just cut up your coffee into very large pieces that don't get hit with the blade at all, and then very, very small ones that get hit multiple times. And it'll be kind of this really random distribution of grind sizes that is pretty much impossible to replicate, which is one issue, and then impossible to get like a specific grind size. You'll just have a bunch of random grind sizes unless you go really, really fine with a blade grinder. So we're going to be talking mostly about burr grinders because the consistency issues with blade grinders kind of makes it impossible to do any kind of solid brewing on or consistent brewing. So unless you go really, really fine, and there's some interesting things you can do with like AeroPresses with a blade grinder that actually tastes pretty good. But I think you have to be better, like really good at coffee to make a blade grinder good, whereas a burr grinder, pretty much anyone can make a solid cup. So on to the next variable that we were talking about. We kind of talked about agitation and time kind of being this next thing that ties into grind. So this would probably be a good time to talk about that. So we just described, you know, what's happening in the grinder. We're basically creating a particle size that has a bunch of these little caverns that have flavor crystals in them that want to be dissolved. And I like to use a analogy here to sugar water, which if you were to think about powdered sugar on one side and really coarse like sugar crystals, like rock sugar on the other side, and you were to throw those into some hot water and stir them, the powdered sugar would dissolve almost instantly, as you can imagine, and the rock stuff would take quite a bit. And if you just sat it there, the rock sugar would probably not dissolve completely ever. So you can kind of think of the powdered sugar as like fines, where the flavor crystals in there are so small that they're exposed to the water and it basically just dissolves them instantly. And the rock crystals are going to be the very coarse side of grinding, where it's probably not going to dissolve. And in the middle, you would have your nice, normal, you know, cane sugar that you get from the store, and that would probably dissolve somewhat quickly, maybe take like 30 seconds or a minute in boiling water. But if you were to take that middle one that dissolves, you know, somewhat quickly, and you would stir it up with a spoon, that actually might dissolve instantly as well, or maybe twice as fast. So you can kind of think of the medium one there is kind of like a grind size, and then the stirring would be like what agitation does to your brewing. So when you're using a kettle, or even if you were to like stir your pour over as you're brewing, you're basically doing, you're stirring up like you would those sugar crystals, where the agitation helps break up and dissolve the flavor that is in the coffee. And so your kettle's doing this the whole time. So depending on how fast or slow you're doing this, you're creating this, I don't know what you'd call that, shaking up like the coffee bed with the water stream that's coming in. Yep. So if you're really gentle, you're maybe not disturbing the coffee grounds very much. And if you're very aggressive, you're really agitating all the coffee grounds there and you're dissolving things really fast. So agitation is a huge extraction pusher, I guess, or
yeah,
I don't know what you'd say there, but it really pushes extraction. And depending on how you pour really will change that. So if you were to go, you know, really coarse, you might actually want a lot of agitation to help with your extractions. And if you're really fine, you'd probably not want as much because you would extract very fast. But the other thing there, the third step, is your time. So when you add up those things, you have a certain size of crystal, flavor crystal exposed or coffee particle exposed, and then you have a certain amount of agitation. You can add the time variable in there that will kind of tell you how fast you're dissolving those flavor crystals that are in there. So if you had this medium size grind particle and you had a medium amount of agitation, it might take 2 minutes to dissolve all the flavor that you want. If you were to do a really fine particle and a still with your medium amount of agitation, it might be a minute and a half to dissolve everything, or 30 seconds if you're espresso. So really fast. And then if you were to go medium on your grind size particles, and then you were going high agitation, you might take that 2 minutes to a minute 30, just because your agitation's higher. And then if you were going a normal medium particle size, and you were doing really low agitation, so very, very soft, maybe with like a mellow drip or something, it might be 3 minutes before it extracts everything, because you don't get that extra agitation to help. So these things all play together. So when you come up with a brewing recipe, you're going to want to understand your flow rates, which is basically your agitation, because how fast you're flowing is how much you're agitating the beds, and then your time and your grind size all in the same recipe. So you want to speak on that?
Yeah, so we'll go kind of the same kind of steps that you went. So yeah, so turbulence or agitation, for me, the more, you know, agitation, the higher extraction you'll get. And it's something that you might want to incorporate into your brewing, but again, it's something to play with. For time, the general like rule for it's the longer water and coffee are in contact, generally the greater the number of soluble compounds that can be dissolved. And then temperature and time can't exactly be interchangeable, or the swap isn't like linear. I would say cold water can't extract what certain solubles that hot water can. That's why you have different taste profiles in like cold brew or like drip. They're gonna taste different. Do you know exactly the chemistry that goes behind like cold water and hot water?
I can kind of speak to it. I don't have perfect science there, but there is that. I'll continue the analogy with the sugar, because it's very useful to think about heat that way as well. So if you were to have those, you know, medium-sized sugar crystals and you had them in cold water and you just sat them in there without doing anything, they probably won't ever dissolve. And you can kind of think of that the same as in coffee. There's some things in the coffee that need a certain amount of heat to dissolve into the water. So when you're doing cold brew, some stuff's just never going to get dissolved. And that's why it has a totally different flavor profile. And the same in if you were to do those medium sugar crystals and you were to do boiling water and you just sat them together, they probably would dissolve and you would actually get that stuff out. But you can think of certain, from what I understand, and I'm definitely no, you know, chemist here, so, but there's certain things that are in the coffee, so certain sugar compounds, acid compounds, lipids, the tannins, all that kind of stuff, that need a certain temperature to actually dissolve, because they're basically crystallized, and without heat, they're not going to basically shake out. They're not going to move into the liquid ever. So you need a certain amount of heat, or possibly a lot of agitation might do it, where you break them up with through just sheer force versus the heat in itself. But you can think of heat in water as kind of its agitation itself, because the water molecules, as they heat up, are bouncing around at a higher rate. So you can think of billiard balls, you know, if you were to like throw them at each other really fast and bounce them all over the place, they might actually break up something if you put it in the middle of a pool table, versus really slow moving ones in the middle of that would probably not. And you can think of water molecules as kind of the same things, or particles in there, as they're bouncing around and they're breaking up pieces of the coffee and they're kind of agitating in a way. So really low water temperature is not agitating. So you're losing out on that breakage.
Yeah. Basically. So lower water temperature gives you, would you say, more sweetness or less sweetness?
I don't think it's about sweetness as much as it's about what the other things that it's not getting. So I don't think it's getting anything that's bitter. And so the perceived sweetness is higher. But actually, like cold brew in general, extraction percentages, if you look at cold brew, is terrible. Like it's like 12 to 14% extractions. It's just super strong. And really, you're losing out on 7% of the things that you could get in cold brew through hot, because some of it just never gets extracted at all. Okay. So you're perceiving, you're probably extracting a lot of sweetness, and you're probably not extracting a lot of these more bitter things, because they're the hardest things to extract. So your perceived sweetness might be higher, but the actual amount of sweetness is actually probably lower.
I see.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So do we want to move into, we kind of talked about that relation pretty well there, I think. So, which is kind of agitation in a way. Agitation, grind size, and time all play together in this intricate puzzle that can be very hard to think about, because one affects the other one in weird ways. But the really easy way, and the way we've kind of simplified the model to help people, is the longer the time, the more bitterness that you'll get. And the shorter the time, the more acids. And you're trying to find the time in the middle of those that are the optimal amounts of acids, sweetness, and bitter. And that's kind of your brew time that we talk about a lot. So when a recipe has a general, like usually 3-minute brew time, it's just because that's a number that will probably be the right extraction of those three compounds. But if you were to grind too fine and you got to that 3-minute, you would have extracted too much, like we were talking about with this cup we're drinking now. So a little bit of bitterness there, even though it brewed, 220, right?
Yeah.
2 minutes and 20 seconds. That's pretty fast brew time, but the fineness of the grind was too much. So we extracted too much. And you could do the exact same thing where you did 3-minute brew time, but way too coarse, and it would be under extracted.
Yeah.
So those things are all playing together in a puzzle there. But brew times usually are pretty good, because if you go really fine, your brew time will usually go up. And so to get your brew time back, you'll have to go coarser anyway, and you'll kind of fix the issue through the wrong means, but it works.
Yeah.
You know, it works.
So the whole goal of brewing, you know, a good cup of coffee is to have an average of both things that you're extracting, both acidic compounds and, you know, bitter compounds, and you're kind of coming up with this average mixture of these things that give you the best taste. And you're using temperature, time, surface area, like grind particle distribution, the size of that. You're using all these and manipulating them to get this overall average taste profile that's good to you. But would you say that different coffees do better under different stressors? Like let's say if you get a Ethiopian versus a Brazil, would you generalize the overall like brew time with that, or would you say one coffee has a different brew time than a different one?
Yeah, that's a good question. And yeah, that's where you kind of use these recipes as not an end all be all like perfect thing, but pretty much as a starting point of where you want to be. So maybe you like 1-16 ratio, and you know you're like using your Kalita Wave and you like it at 3 minutes brew time, and you have a specific pour rate and agitation that you've kind of figured out for that and you're consistent with, and a grind size that you think works for that, and you brew both those coffees both at 3 minutes, you hit your mark, everything is great, then that's where you really want to go into taste, and you taste that, and maybe the Brazil has, you know, more sweetness and less acidity or more nuttiness or whatever, and just a different balance of flavor potential. And maybe at 3 minutes, it tastes, you know, over-extracted. Maybe it has some, you know, notes there just overpowering the amount of sweetness because it didn't have the acidity that something else did to balance it out. So you would maybe go, you know, a little faster with that one. You go 230 or something brew time, and you try it again and see if the flavors taste more how you were expecting. And then maybe the Ethiopian's the opposite, where it's got so much sweetness and acidity and flavors and whatnot, and you can really just push the extraction really far and get a lot of different flavors, and they're just continuing to balance each other out because there's just a lot of sweetness there. And maybe it goes to 315 or 320 and it still tastes amazing. So that's where every coffee then has, it's probably its own optimal range, because the flavor crystals that you're dissolving in there, the flavor potential is just different from the two coffees. There's more sweetness, there's more acidity, or there's different amounts of those things, and they balance out differently. So that's how I'd look at that.
So it's just a lot of trial and error and tasting and trying to dial in that specific coffee that you're trying to dial in. And it's not like my brew has to end at 3 minutes because that's my recipe. No, that can fluctuate. It can change, and you can manipulate it to get the best cup of coffee depending on what that specific coffee needs.
Yeah, it's important that you're just consistent when you're brewing these things. So if you're going to brew two different coffees and try to figure out their optimal range, that means you have to be consistent from brew to brew, because this is, you know, like a scientific theory type thing. You want all your variables consistent except for the coffee in this one. And so you brewed with exactly the same pour rate, exact same grind size, the exact same water temperatures, and then you try to get it, you know, to the same brew time, and you make sure all those are consistent, and you're just tasting the coffee that's now the different thing there. You taste that, and then you'll want to move on to your next variable to change, which for most people is the easiest one, is to just change your grind size. So you're leaving, again, water temperature the same, the ratio is the same, the brew time is hopefully the same as well. It'll probably go a little faster if you go coarser, and then a little slower if you go finer, but it's in your window. And all you're changing then is the grind size, and it's going to then hopefully improve your cup in the right way. And if it, you know, made it too bitter, then you changed it in the wrong way. And if it is a little too sour, you probably changed it the other way, and you want to find something in the middle of those. So really, you want to be consistent with your variables and then change one at a time. You could also do it in a different way. You could leave grind and everything the same, and you could change your water temperature, or you could leave your water temperature and grind the same, and you could change your pour rates. But you want to make sure all the other things stay the same each time you change one of these things, because if not, you'll get really confused about why one cup is tasting better than the other cup, because you changed multiple things. You don't know which one actually helped and which one maybe didn't do anything. So consistency is important.
Thank you for listening. If you want to hear more, please subscribe in any of the places you listen to podcasts. For more information and where to follow us, please check out the show notes. Thank you.